This is Studio 360, and I'm Kurt Anderson. Kelly Link is an author who writes some of the most unusual and fetching short stories around right now. The first story in her new collection, Getting Trouble, is called The Summer People. It's about a teenage girl in the rural South whose bootlegging father's just taken off. The girl, Franz, got the flu and is stuck looking after rich people's summer houses, the other part of their family business.
At the convenience, Fran picked up milk, eggs, whole wheat sandwich bread, and cold cuts for the Robertses, Tylenol and more NyQuil for herself, as well as a can of frozen orange juice, microwave burritos, and Pop-Tarts. On the tab, she told Andy. "I hear your pappy got himself into trouble the other night," Andy said. "That's so," Fran said. "He went down to Florida yesterday morning. He said he needs to get right with God." "God ain't who your pappy needs to get on his good side."
So far, we could be in Dorothy Allison or Bobby Ann Mason territory. But then something strange happens. We learn that one of those houses she has to take care of is enchanted in some way, a fairy house. The summer people aren't quite human, and they don't pay Fran and her family in money.
"Here," Fran said, "I brought this back down." "My iPod," Ophelia said. She turned it over. "They did this?" The iPod was heavier now. It had a little walnut case instead of pink silicone, and there was a figure inlaid in ebony and gilt. "A dragonfly?" "A snake doctor," Fran said. "That's what my daddy calls him." "They did this for me?" "They'd embellish a bedazzled jean jacket if you left it there," Fran said. "No lie. They can't stand to leave a thing alone."
And that is Kelly Link's signature move. Everything seems mundane and believably boring, but then it turns out to be supernatural and usually dangerous. Get in Trouble is her fourth collection of stories, and she joins me here now. Hello, Kelly Link.
Hi, it's a pleasure to be here.
So you've got one of those names that is fun to say. I'm sure your friends probably call you Kelly Link.
Actually, growing up, my friends called me Smelly Stink.
But you've gotten back at them now. I mentioned the great story, The Summer People, which starts the collection. When you wrote that and when you write a story like that, do you start with a realistic story notion about people and their messed up lives and then see where that leads you? Or did you imagine this particular magical house and its particular inhabitants and then see how that could become the center of a story?
I imagined the second. I imagined the house first, and I imagined it in a place where you wouldn't necessarily expect a fantasy fairy house to be, which was the Appalachian Mountains. And once I had that, then I could start thinking about the kind of people who could be in that story.
You've talked about reading Tolkien as a child, as did I, as did plenty of other writers. When did you know that you didn't have to give this up and this would be your path?
Well, I went through an MFA program at the same time that I began working in a children's bookstore. And while I was writing stories for the workshop, I was also rereading a lot of classic children's fantasy. And I ended up writing stories that had a lot of fantastic components.
Really?
And they were basically fantasy. And, you know, I wrote them and I turned them in and nobody said, you can't do that.
I was going to ask. I mean, in an MFA program where everybody's trying to be a serious writer with only the pretentiousness of 23-year-olds, they didn't sort of put you down?
They did not recoil in horror. I think they maybe were a little perplexed, but they treated me gently and nobody told me to stop doing it.
I think you were probably lucky to come along when you did. If you were just even 10 or 15 years older, it would have been a harder row.
I think absolutely. But I'm also left-handed. So, you know, 50 years ago, I would have had to learn
to
write right-handed.
Me too. You are, it seems to me, having read this book of stories, both a realist and a fantasist. Therefore, I wondered, you must have twice the influences of other writers. So, first of all, who are your biggest realist influences?
Well, I really love Grace Paley. Absolutely love Grace Paley. Eudora Welty, big fan of her work. I love Laurie Colvin.
Yeah. And then on the fantasy side?
Tons and tons. You know, M.R. James, Lovecraft even, Ursula Le Guin, Peter Straub.
What? Lovecraft in particular seems to be within this great, you know, revival moment of fantasy seems to be having his own special revival. Why is that?
I don't know. I you know, he's kind of a singular prose stylist who's not going to beat everybody's taste.
My new
husband, you know, had to read some Lovecraft for a review he was writing, and he got through 1.5 stories, and he kept on saying to me, do I have to read more? Does it get better?
Yeah.
And I said, well, it's probably not going to get better for you.
Yeah. And when you describe the prose style that's not for everybody, what is peculiar about it?
Well, you know, he's very atmospheric, a lot of descriptions of things in which basically he's telling you he can't possibly describe them because they're so terrible. It's a writer named Jack Womack who says that Lovecraft boils down to aeons and aeons of unspeakable evil.
You grew up in Florida. Did that shape you as a writer, do you think?
Probably. I grew up reading, you know, Dave Barry in the paper.
Well, there you go.
Carl Hiaasen Mysteries, where, you know, the guy with the Roto-Rooter for an arm. It is a place that has a really peculiar, lively environment. You know, there are always things coming in the house. You know, I think the first night that we spent in our house in Florida, you know, a cloud of 2,000 mosquitoes flew down the chimney, which my parents discovered because they were being bitten. They walked out in the living room and they could see this silvery cloud coming. And, you know, why is there a fireplace in Florida, for one thing?
In your real life, in your heart of hearts, how much of a rationalist are you? And how much do you believe in spooky, magical, supernatural things?
You know, I've never had anything spooky happen to me. But I'm always happy when someone I know has a ghost story or tells me about something weird that happened. I am absolutely willing to believe
really?
That what they're telling me.
It's not as though that's amusing, but I don't really believe it. You actually believe it.
Well, you know, it's a great thing when somebody else tells you a story. You think, well, who can say? But that was a great story.
Yeah. You have talked about reading a lot of fan fiction. And I don't think I've ever heard a professional writer say such a thing. Why do you do it?
Well, I mean, I think it tells you a lot what story makes people want. I mean, you know, these are people often who are deeply attached, as I often am, to particular books. And then when they go off and write, the reason why they're writing is they want to see those characters happy. They want to see them, you know, eating dinner together and going to see movies and maybe painting each other's toenails and having sex. They just want to have them have some joy. And it's not that I go off and I think, well, I'm going to write a story where everybody's happy. But I think I want to write stories in which people feel this attachment to the characters in which they think,
I want to make their life
be happy
nice
for a while. Yeah. I mean, that's an understandable impulse.
Yeah.
You love characters so much, you think, I just wish they could be happy.
Yeah. There's a story in this collection about two guys having a baby with a surrogate mother whose pregnancy gets complicated and terrifying. It's a classic short story with nothing really supernatural that happens. Tell me about that and why you put it in the book. It seems like kind of an outlier.
Well, I did want one thing in there that felt different from the other stories. A lot of it pulls from the lives of my husband and myself. We had a daughter at 24 weeks, and we spent a lot of time in hospitals with her. And she's 6 now. She's in great shape. But there was sort of a feeling of suspended time and suspension in which everything that happened seemed enormous and momentous. And yet everything was moving really slowly. We couldn't take her home. Took her home for a day. She had to go right back into the hospital. We spent another half a year in hospital after that. And so I wanted a story which would sort of capture that feeling where you think, I'm never going to get out of this place. And yet the best thing in the world has just happened.
As I was reading that story and waiting for whatever terrible thing is going to happen, and by the way, listeners, it ends okay. But I realized that actually pregnancy and childbirth and child creation is the closest thing to supernatural fantasy in our real lives, in my real life anyway.
Absolutely. Suddenly there is a person who is not there previously.
Yeah. And that you've made in this crazy way that makes no sort of normal sense.
No. In fact, you know, didn't it take people hundreds of years to figure out that's where they were coming from?
Yeah. They're like, did it?
I think so.
Really? That one was a straightforward, realistic story. Do you want to do more of that kind of writing?
You know, the next thing I have to work on is a novel in which I plan to cram in as much fantasy as possible, as much weird stuff as possible. But I did like writing that story.
Yeah, you said you have to write a novel. You've published 4 books of stories, been writing for 20-odd years, I guess. How come you haven't written a novel yet?
You know, I didn't really want to. I really love short stories. And then in the last 5 or 6 years, the stories that I've been writing have gotten longer and longer. And a very good friend who's, you know, smart about this stuff said to me, they're getting longer because you should write a novel now. And I thought about it and I thought, that seems right. I think I should probably see how far I could push it, you know, if I can make something even longer.
And I read somewhere that your publisher really wants you to write a novel as well.
Well, you know, this is the thing about writing short stories is you write short stories and people say, we really, really like these stories. Are you going to write a novel? And I don't know why, but I think maybe after 20 years of hearing that, you think, well, okay, well, maybe I should write a novel. That sounds like fun. And I often go and work in cafes or in other people's houses, and the people that I work with are, for the most part, novelists. So I have some expert, you know, problem solvers that I can, if I get stuck.
For the books you publish?
No. When I write, I'm usually writing with other people, two or three other people.
With, in what sense? Literally sitting
we're
in a room?
Sitting in a room or in a cafe.
What? Why?
It's companionable. You know, we all feel happier knowing that somebody else is suffering alongside with us. No, it doesn't sound good to you.
No, I feel far more when I'm writing. I need to be alone far more than I do when I'm using the bathroom or something. I need to be locked in privately. Yeah.
Well, you know, and I recognize that that's true. But I actually, when I was working on my own, I was miserable. I gave up a lot. Once I started working with other people, I actually thought, well, this seems much more possible than it did previously.
Well, it's working for you.
It does seem to be.
And best of luck with it.
Well, thank you.
Kelly Link's new book is called Get in Trouble, and it's out right now.
What?